fans, friends, amigos, supporters, haters, all of you. Happy Friday, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Dr. Audio at the controls, producer Robbie in a cowboy hat with a mug of Joe in hand. Everything's looking good here. Full steam ahead. Now, I am going to get a couple of things today that are very important to go over. One, read some of the tea leaves from what just happened in the great primary, primaries of 2018. Tuesday, there were seven states that voted, big elections. I'll go through some of those results and what they mean. I also, we will talk about the Masterpiece Cake Shop case. This is the case out of Colorado where the Civil Rights Commission ruled against a baker who refused to bake a gay wedding cake. And this case, I'll tell you, is fundamentally misunderstood by just about every pundit that is on the airwaves right now. So I think in the second hour, we'll tackle that. And you will leave with a far deeper understanding. This, I promise you, you will understand better what this case is about, and more importantly, what it means in the landscape of, well, religious freedom and freedom of speech moving forward in this country. Lots of other stories, too. I want to move right now across the pond, because I think in this context right now, there's a big G7 summit coming up, and there's all this talk about Trump burning allies left and right. And so fundamental to understanding our allies is to, well, understand our allies and see what kind of countries these places are. And a lot has been made over the years of our closeness, tightness, if you will, with Britain. It's been called a special relationship. And I think I heard somebody opining today how, you know, how is Trump going to achieve bridge building with Great Britain, with England, if he can't match the level of friendliness that Reagan had with Margaret Thatcher, et cetera, et cetera. And my immediate reaction, friends, is that, well, the Great Britain of Margaret Thatcher is not the Great Britain that we have today. And it kind of carries over to a broader concept, doesn't it? If we want to be friends with countries, it's like being friends on the playground. You've got to have some things in common. And I reflect on the current state of Great Britain. I don't know how much we have in common with them anymore. And I'll tell you, nothing really does highlight this for me as much as what's going on right now in the Tommy Robinson case. Now, if you have not heard about Tommy Robinson, let me tell you a couple of things. One, he's a leader of a political movement in the country, the nationalist movement, and he's described oftentimes as this far-right crazy nationalist, and he gets dismissed in the media as such. But really what he is kind of an amateur guy who goes around and reports on high-profile cases that are politically inconvenient to the British government. And right now, there is nothing, no subject matter, no milieu that is more politically inconvenient for European governments in general, and I think the British government in particular, than that of, well, immigrants from the Middle East causing trouble. And the reason for this is quite simple, and we've talked about this over and over again, but I'll just do a quick recap if you're new to the program. Europe, for the greater part of the 70s, 80s, and then especially in the 90s, decided that it was to remake itself. The left-wing politicians that were elected and duly came about decided that Europe was too white. Europe was too staid. Europe was too traditional and set in its ways, and what Europe needed was a splash of color. Now, some of this was dictated by economics, right? Birth rates were dropping, and they needed people to come in and do work, but they favored tremendously immigration from Islamic countries. And what happened, by and large, is these immigrants came to countries like Holland, came to countries like Great Britain and France, and never assimilated. Especially the waves that came later, that came in the 80s and 90s. And they didn't assimilate for a variety of reasons, but one of the most important reasons is their culture prohibited it. I think when you look at immigration and you try to I'm a very pro-immigrant. I understand this. You know, my parents came here to this country and started over in 1977. But in doing so, they came with the desire to integrate into American society, and they came from a common cultural place. My parents born and raised in Europe. They did not come to this country with a hostile attitude to the United States. Actually, far from it. They came to the United States with a very friendly attitude toward this country and very pleased to be leaving the left-wing demagoguery behind that they had in Europe and suffered under in Europe. So they come to this country and they're very open and they're very excited to be here. And a lot of the immigrants, I know this firsthand because, again, spent a lot of time in Europe and have friends in Europe and hear this as a common refrain, but it's whispered. It's always whispered under the bridge. You do not say this out loud in a fancy cafe in Paris. I'm just going to tell you, but people quietly will tell you. We have problems with these immigrants. They're here and they're not sending their kids to school. That's one I hear all the time. My dad's cousin is a school teacher in Switzerland. The country accepted probably the least amount of immigrants, but quite a lot of folks from Muslims. And culturally, they absolutely struggled with integration unlike any other immigrant group. Didn't send their kids to school, created pockets of community pockets that weren't integrating into the greater society at large. And in England in particular, you have this, and it's widespread, but you cannot talk about it because it goes against the ingrained political dogma that the establishment absolutely will not back off of. And nothing, in my view, nothing is more illustrative of this than the Tommy Robinson case. Tommy Robinson is this guy who goes around reporting on various cases involving crimes committed by these refugees and immigrants that have come to Great Britain. And in so doing, he happened to report, I think 13 months ago or a year and a half ago, he was reporting on a case involving a grooming gang, basically a large group of Middle Eastern immigrants who had come to Great Britain and were now charged with raping children as young as 7, 8, 9, 10, and some that were 11 and 12. Now, nowhere, as soon as this case came about, the judge that was in charge of the case put a blanket gag order down, not allowing anyone in the media to speak about it. Now, this is something that is very foreign to us. Remember what I was saying about how we think of Great Britain as this great ally. We think of them as our friends and this country that basically gave us birth and so forth and so on. But this is one very important difference that we have. And it is our concept of free speech. Now, we here in this country, very commonly, judges will put a gag order down. They can gag only who? Officers of the court. The judge has a control over us lawyers. Like, I'm an attorney. If I'm representing a client, it's a controversial, high-profile case. The judge can say, no media. But the judge's gag order cannot, by laws of this country ingrained in our Constitution, cannot prohibit anyone in the general public, for example, me, now acting as a talk show host rather than as a lawyer for one of the parties, from commenting about the case. And that is why we always have, we don't always agree, right? But we always have a robust discussion in this country about what is going on. In my view, this is absolutely essential to a healthy, thriving democracy. It's like relationships. The husband and wife that never talk, well, their relationship is crap, right? You got a girlfriend, you got to talk to her. You've got a significant other. You've got to discuss your problems. And we as a country have to do that. There are fundamental problems right now in Great Britain, in other places in Europe, that aren't being talked about because they don't have freedom of speech rights. And their politicians have decided that what is going on is inconvenient to the lies that they've been telling for 30 plus years. That is what this Tommy Robinson case is about. Now, I'm going to, if you want to know really what, if you want to get an idea exactly what happened, he was arrested outside the Leeds Crown Court, simply reporting on Facebook Live, mind you. This was just him broadcasting himself. And he's reporting on the gang trial, the gang rape, grooming gang trial that was going on. But before this happened, last year, this is where it all started. Last year, he began confronting the individual perps that were going into court being charged with truly heinous crimes. Listen, this is brief audio from that report. This is the original report, mind you, that got Tommy Robinson in trouble.
There's 28 men on starting trial for raping young kids.
What are you in court for, mate? Why are you hiding your face? Why are you hiding your face? Because it's not an 11-year-old kid. What's the matter? What's the matter? Why are you hiding your face? What's the matter? Are you Muhammad, are you?
Nope.
There's eight Muhammads on trial today for raping English kids.
Well, I'm not Muhammad.
No? What's your name then?
You're one of the other 20.
What are you in court for? Raping kids. Raping kids. You rape kids. You gang rape and molest children. That's what you do. That's what you do, you scumbag.
Okay. Well, okay, maybe you don't like what he's saying. But that's not the point of free speech rights, correct? So after this happens, we get a bit of an outrage, and the judge comes in and basically quickly gives him a trial. I think that lasted all of a few hours. Now, Katie Hopkins, who's a commentator for Rebel Media, also I think she has a column in the Guardian. It's the Daily Mail. Katie Hopkins was talking to Tucker Carlson on Fox News last Thursday about this, and this is how she described it.
He was outside the court. He was reporting on the trial of a grooming gang, as I would call it, a rape squad. Within 5 hours, he was arrested, he was tried, and he was sent to prison for 13 months, and none of us were allowed to talk about it, write about it, mention it, because there was also a ban on any of the media speaking about it.
Well, that's the part I don't understand.
These are very dark times in the UK. It's a very curious feeling in this country at the moment, and I would say the country is on a knife edge. There is a real sense now that we are against our own government, that the establishment is working against us, and in order to cleanse voices it doesn't like, it will put them inside for as long as it needs to shut them up.
And that's just it. It does not extend. This prohibition does not extend now just to mentioning the gang rape trial of these horrible, sick perverts. But it's now extending to even talking about the arrest of someone objectively exercising their civic rights. Here's what the arrest sounded like, just so you get an idea, because he was arrested for breach of peace. You tell me if this sounds like breach of peace to you.
29 of them on trial, two women.
Yeah, for grooming, isn't it?
For grooming 11-year-olds, well, allegedly. Just doing the media, mate. Just trying to show people who are watching. Yeah. This is what's happening. This is what the case is. This is how many girls were victims. This is what they've said, and this is what they've done. Yeah, mate.
Oh,
this is are you going to arrest me?
My colleague is going to explain what's going to happen next, right?
Am I being arrested? I am being arrested.
It wasn't a breach of peace.
I've caused a breach of peace. I'm being arrested.
But the content of what you're streaming.
The content of what I'm streaming. I'm being arrested for breach of the peace.
Yeah, so this is a just to be clear, this happened on May 25th. The clip before was what happened about a year ago. Because this trial started some time back. It's not a breach of peace. Actually, the police, my understanding of the case legally is that it's a breach of a court order. So the police are arresting him, but they're not telling him accurately what they're arresting him for. They're calling it a breach of peace, But really, it's violating a court order that would absolutely, under any circumstances, be illegal in this country. Now, I'll tell you a very interesting thing. You might be wondering, what would be the counter argument to this, right? What are sympathetic Britons saying? And I was surprised when I commented on this case as it was happening at the end of May. I was surprised I got comments on Twitter. I'm gonna see if I still have them up, but from actual people in Great Britain who were trying to argue with me that they thought that this was a good thing. But I'm telling you right now, this could not be a darker moment for civilization. And it's because if you bury a conversation that is unpleasant and unnecessary, in any context I can think of, there's never a good outcome that comes from it. I'll explain that when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem, and Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Rogowski, Sam Nation. All right, talking about Tommy Robinson in the UK. This is a guy who is sort of an amateur journalist. He also leads some small political party, a nationalist party. He definitely, I'll tell you what his bias is. He's definitely for not having immigrants that don't assimilate into the UK. Now, he's being portrayed because of this. He's being portrayed as a racist, okay, as a bigot, as a Nazi, and that type of thing. Even if all of that were to be true about Tommy Robinson, none of this would justify arresting him for speaking an opinion. But that is precisely what has happened in the United Kingdom. So we have essentially the birthplace, right, of civil liberties. I'm talking now back to the Magna Carta, right? A revised social contract enshrined in legal form where we trace our law, right? We follow British law. We go back to – we don't follow the European continental system. We here in the United States look to English law. In fact, if you go to law school, they'll occasionally bore you with some old English laws when it comes to torts and the like. So we do not just – figuratively, but we literally do look up to the British system. And in the British system right now, they don't have the Bill of Rights. They didn't have an enterprising group of citizens come about in the 18th century come along and say, "Hey, we need to enshrine some basic freedoms that will have a lasting impact on our democracy the way that they've had here." Not everybody in the United Kingdom agrees that this is just a miscarriage of justice. And I went and I looked at some of these Twitter comments that I'd gotten when I posted about this case as it was happening back at the end of May. And I'll tell you what people are saying is, well, it's interfering with justice. You've got a complicated case. And any mention of it outside, we want to preserve the sanctity of this case. Okay. I don't know. I don't know if I buy that one bit. First of all, aren't they interfering with Robinson's justice? Now you can't even talk about Tommy Robinson getting arrested for speaking his mind. But the other part of this is, let's reflect on our own country. I mean, we don't have gag orders like this. We can't prevent the media from speaking about a current issue. And, you know, the one argument is it's going to incite mob justice, right? It'll incite mob justice. Well, did we incite mob justice in the OJ case with I would say probably that's in my lifetime, certainly the case that got the most amount of media attention. Well, hardly, right? Worked out pretty good for OJ. It's not because of the media, it's because he had really good lawyers. And, you know, racial issues and that kind of thing played in the background. But I don't see that being the operative issue. I see a more alarming thing at hand, and that is that people are willing to give up their own civil liberties for some sense of safety and security, and especially when it comes to the left, a freedom of examination, of critical analysis of their positions. Geert Wilders, who's a big campaigner for free speech, free rights, and a member of parliament in the Netherlands, went to Great Britain and said this. He was at The Hague. This was at The Hague, but he went to Great Britain too. And this was at the British embassy. And this is what he said.
Britain used to be a bastion of freedom of speech. Today, its authorities are behaving like North Korea and Saudi Arabia. I'm here on behalf of millions in the Netherlands, in Europe, and also in Britain. And in their name, I say we will no longer be silent. Our future is at stake, and we will protect it. Free Tommy Robinson. Release him from jail today. Restore freedom of speech and stop gagging the people.
I'll tell you why I think that this is political. There is a group in Great Britain called Pedophile Hunters, and they're a fairly well-known group. They televise a show, and it's something like To Catch a Predator. And what they do, they basically go and they pose online as it's a trap, right? It's a setup. They pose online as a young girl or a young boy, and they get adults to come and meet up, and they film everything, and they shame these people, and they follow the court cases. And by the way, there's an article in The Guardian which talks about that English and Welsh police forces have reported a huge rise in the use of evidence from these vigilante groups in decisions to charge suspects. And it's funny, these shows end up airing, and they air on TV, and nobody has a problem with it. But you know why? Because as long as they're catching a pedophile that isn't an immigrant, it doesn't go against the political narrative. You have no problem with that. And politicians and the courts in Great Britain have no problem going after bad guys as long as it doesn't hurt their political narrative, and they will stifle and are currently stifling any speech that contradicts them. All right, we've got our legal segment up next. What could a legal segment and Chris Farley being a fat guy have anything to do with the law? I will tell you when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time. Breaking rocks in a hot
sun. I'm on the law in a low one. Sam Majowski, all right. All right. You guys all remember Chris Farley. He died. It's been 1997 is when Chris Farley died. A drug overdose, I believe, is how it was reported. And so it's been a number of years. But apparently once a celebrity, always a celebrity. If you die famous, your estate still holds on to your intellectual property rights. And in this case, there was a lawsuit against a bicycle manufacturing company that had a line of bicycles that had big fat tires, and they were called fat bikes. Now they weren't. I know what you're thinking. No. They weren't specifically marketed to fat people. Chris Farley was a big guy. You guys know this. Remember Tommy Boy when he plays the son of the auto parts magnet, and he has that scene with David Spade. Here, play. What you got? The clip. Wait, play the clip.
That guy in a little coat. That guy in a little coat.
Don't.
That guy in a little coat.
He's in David Spade's jacket.
That guy in a little coat.
And then,
coat.
Yeah, it doesn't end well.
Take it off, dickhead, I'm serious.
Richard, what's happening?
And it just bursts, right? Kills David Spade's jacket. Anyway. I bring all this up to say it wasn't a bike that was marketed to fat people. It just had fat tires, but they used Chris Farley's name. So does the family have a case? And the answer is yes. By the way, this case was not disposed of by the court. So we don't have a decision from the court. But it turns out that the company settled it for an undisclosed figure. So there's, I'm assuming, some concern. That the court would rule against them. But here's what I think is more interesting about this. It involves copyright law. I don't practice in this field. But copyright law, I'm a big proponent, by the way, of copyright law generally. I think that if you come up with a great idea, you should be protected. And I think that if, and I know there's a school of thought out there, wacky as it is, that there should be no copyright law. That things should just, it should be a wild, you know, wild frontier. You come up with an idea. There'd be, I'm telling you right now, there'd be no reason to innovate. People innovate generally, 99.9% of them innovate because they want to get rich. They want to make money. And you've got to protect that. That's why people take risks, not just in coming up with the idea, but taking that idea. This is always the hard part, taking that idea and bringing it to market. I think the same is true of celebrities. It's different, but, you know, not everybody makes it as a celebrity, and celebrities are wealthy, and it, you know, and people look up to it and work hard and take acting classes, and most of them don't make it, but that kind of thing, right? You still have to protect people's life work. Okay, so copyright law, you, by the way, you know what, you know, keeps extending, because you're wondering, right? He died back in 97, Chris Farley. This has been, how long is that, 21 years? So 21 years, and you're thinking, well, how long does this family have, whoever is successor in interest, how long is that copyright for his name, his likeness, and all that? How long can it hang out there? And the answer to that question right now is pretty long. And it's pretty long thanks to a company you all have heard of. Any guesses? Any guesses at what company I'm talking about? Disney. If you didn't hear me, I said Disney. That's right. Disney is the number one lobbyist of Capitol Hill for the extension of copyright laws of anybody out there. The last extension copyright law happened was the Sonny Bono Act. And Sonny Bono Act, it was January, it said, basically, it happened in 1998. And it basically said that it was for corporate works was 95 years from the first year of publication or 120 years from the year of creation. And for individually created stuff, it was life of the author plus 70 years. It was, and if you look at the time before that, the act before that was the highest you could go was about 70 years. And the extension before that that came in 1909, that was before Mickey Mouse came about, was only 60 years. Can you imagine, by the way, what would happen? Just think about this for a second. What would happen if Disney lost the copyright, the trademark to Mickey Mouse? And any company out there right now, right? Any company could out there could market, could make a Mickey Mouse bag, a Mickey Mouse purse, a Mickey Mouse hat, and wouldn't have to pay any royalties to Disney. Could set up another Disneyland, for example. Well, I know I'm going a little bit long, but hear me out on this. It's an interesting question, because on one side, you look at it and go, how they can't just take away the principal livelihood of this company, right? That is their trademark. But on the other hand, I don't know if you go to Disneyland. I don't know if it's getting better, but I know it's getting a lot more expensive. Do you know what tickets are now? It's insane. I see all these people at Disneyland. I think to myself, how the hell can they afford this? Well, anyway, maybe somebody could come along with a better Disneyland that costs less money. Be a competition to the main Disneyland. See, that's the argument, right? The free market argument. So at any rate, it's an interesting discussion, and I think the appropriate decision here was made for them to pay out, because you can't just do that. You can't just exploit somebody's name so quickly. It's a violation of law, and justice was done. All right, don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, back after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
I have an answer to my own question. I do. No, really. I was asking, how is it possible that there are so many people at Disneyland? Our family, we're very lucky, and we have season passes. We love Disneyland. And the great thing about a season pass is you don't feel this stress of having to, you know, go there one day and do everything, right? You can go two rides, three rides, and go home, which is about all I can do. So I have noticed, and I have no empirical evidence for this, but I have noticed lately, I live in Orange County, and so Disneyland is close for me. I've noticed lately that there are just an unbelievable amount of human bodies everywhere in Disneyland. And I have been thinking about this for some time. What could the reason be? Because tickets are out of this world expensive. And season passes are, I mean, I still remember you could get a season pass. Jeez, I think I got my first one for $130 or something like that. You know, well, yeah, it had half the year blacked out, but you didn't want to be there on those days anyway. So $99, Robbie? Robbie says he got his first one for $99. Okay, well, it very well maybe. It was cheap. Even, and then when was that? 90, 98, 99, 2000, something like that? I can't hear you. 96? See, okay, all right. So, I mean, we haven't had that kind of inflation. The prices are now, just mark my word, extraordinary. I think most passes $400+ per person, right, per year. I know what happened. I figured it out. What happened is Disney came along and they allowed financing for passes. Now, financing is a very interesting thing. And by the way, this was a very clever deal that Disney did. But by financing the pass, the cost of the pass was no longer a one-time bullet that had to be, you know, bitten all in one go by the customer, right? The visitor. So in other words, right? So before you had to get somebody to put $100 on their credit card, or $200 on their credit card, all in one go, and it was limited by some very basic market forces. Yes, there are people that go into debt on their credit cards and spend money ridiculously, but it's always subject to some limits, right? I mean, if somebody can barely afford $100, my guess is their credit card limit is about $1,000, and that's very limiting in the kind of purchase power that they have. But now when you take a $300 pass and spread it among 12 months, well, what do you got? What are you paying? I mean, you're paying less than $30 a month, right? Am I doing my math right? Well, that's very affordable. I mean, even if, you know, you're making $15 an hour, right? That's affordable. People are looking at that going, I only have to work 2 hours a month to pay for my Disney pass. And I looked it up, and I'm right about this. The number of passes that have sold have just soared. They're up. They're up, up, and away. And they're pushing it. I know when I was there renewing the pass, they asked me, do you want to pay it over time? And I'm just not that kind of guy. I want to pay things and be done with it. I'm only making monthly payments to Disneyland, reminding me of, by the way, you're paying for this. You need to go. That's another side effect of it, too. Yeah, people have that hit their credit card, have their $30 hit. Oh, I got to go to Disney. I got to use my pass. I got to go to Disneyland. Before they sold a pass, people went to, you know, six times right away, lost interest, and then they didn't come back to the park, which is good for me and you because we would grow into the park. And we don't, you know, we don't want them stinking around the park. Fewer the people, the better. But not for Disneyland, right? They want people there. It's not just the cost of the pass, but it's them spending money inside the park. A very interesting economic argument. You make a little change, you finance something, boom, it takes off. That's why leasing's so popular in cars. Absolutely. People buy more car than they otherwise would. If you forced everybody to buy a car in cash, can you imagine? They couldn't sell. Nobody would be buying Mercedes. Who could afford to, you know, put down 80 grand cash? Forget it. All right, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. All right, switching gears a little bit here. I wanted to talk about the report that's going to come out by the Inspector General, Michael Horowitz. He's the DOJ watchdog. Oversees both the Department of Justice and its related entities, such as the FBI. And there was something that happened this week. You may have heard a little scuttlebutt about it, and that is that his report is expected any day. Now they're reporting that it's coming out on Trump's birthday. When is that, Robbie? Do you know? Is that next week? Anyway, but something happened. Well, as is typical in Washington, the draft of the report leaked. It got out. And I heard a very interesting theory I wanted to share with you. Alan Dershowitz was on Fox and Friends on Thursday reacting to this report that this report had gotten out. And of course, the report has a volume of very unflattering things about Comey and others. It is expected to unload on Comey and to unload on Loretta Lynch, excuse me. June 14th is when it's coming out. Okay, so when is that? That's next week. Next Thursday. It's supposed to have a lot of unflattering stuff about Loretta Lynch and James Comey related to their handling of the Hillary Clinton email investigation. Now, I'm going to... Okay, the way that's being interpreted by CNN is, oh-ho, see, it was Comey sunk Hillary Clinton and he screwed Hillary Clinton and it's gonna show that and blah, 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 blah. They're back to that narrative, right? First, Comey was a scoundrel. Then he was a saint. Then now he's, you know, obviously the face of the anti-Trump resistance movement. But something else occurred in all of this. And that is that this report got released, and the theory that Alan Dershowitz espoused is that it was released by people who feared that it would get changed, that some of the honesty of this report was found to be so refreshing by careerists inside the department that they sent it out. I think that can cut either way, by the way. I mean, it could have been... Somebody in there is fearing that Trump is going to come in and nefariously change the report. Although Trump can't even squash Mueller. He can't even tell his own Attorney General. He can't even tell Jeff Sessions I just don't buy any of that. But I do believe that there are career people in the bureau who are absolutely incensed over the way that McCabe and Comey and others have behaved. And they are desperate for the truth to get out. And it is. So it's as I've always said here, this thing started out, whatever the bomb that is lobbed at Trump, and here it would be, well, you know, what is it? Obstruction of justice. Trump fires Comey. Obstruction of justice. How dare he fire this Boy Scout? Tremendous man, asset to the Bureau, greatest law enforcement officer to have ever walked the planet. And then it later turns out, well, you know what? This guy is dirty, and an Obama-appointed inspector general is calling it so. Telling you, folks, the tide is turning, and you will have front seats here on this program to see it. All right, don't go anywhere. I'm going to get into the Supreme Court ruling that was released on Monday about the gay cake controversy, gay wedding cake that did not get baked and consequently stirred up a storm. I'll go through that, give you the full background and legal analysis up next. You do not want to miss this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. All righty. The Masterpiece Cake Shop case. This has been in the news for a number of years. And a decision finally came down from the court, from the Supreme Court on Monday. Now, if you remember basically what happened here, you had a guy named Jack Phillips who was a master baker, also a devout Christian, who back in 2012 had a same-sex couple come into his store. They asked for him to bake them a gay wedding cake. And he said no. He said, I will bake you a birthday cake, I'll make you brownies, I'll make you cupcakes, whatever you want, but I will not make you a wedding cake. These cakes are an expression of who I am. They're highly artistic. And I'm just not going to do it. Now, what they did is they, instead of just going to another baker that was down the street, they took their case to the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. And the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, like all these civil rights commissions, I mean, it sounds nice, right? But it's filled with left-wing bigots. And these left-wing bigots absolutely hate Christians. They hate conservatives. They hate anybody. Well, this is before Trump, but now especially, man, if you're being discriminated against for being a Trump supporter, forget it. You know, the Civil Rights Commission is not going to hear your case. And the evidence of their bias is widely discussed, actually, in the body of the Supreme Court decision. I'm not just making this up. This is not just coming off the, you know, spouting off the top of my head. The court's bias was so self-evident based on its previous decisions and cases with the reverse facts. So for me, the law is the law. You know, you've got a constitutional right to speak, for example. Well, it protects the socialist, it protects the Nazi. It protects crazies on both sides. So you don't get to pick and choose when to apply a law. And that's exactly what the commission did. And by the way, these commissions do it all over the place. I read about this all the time. What they did here is while they ruled against this Christian baker and said, thou shalt bake a gay cake. They, in previous cases where there were Christian people or, I don't know, political people or whatever that wanted an anti-gay, I'm summarizing this, but, you know, an anti-gay cake to be baked. And the baker, right, in that case, for their own political beliefs or political reasons, said, no, I'm not comfortable. I'm not comfortable baking an anti-gay cake. And these cases made their way up. There was at least three of them that made their way up to the commission. And the commissioners in Colorado decided, no, you cannot make a pro-gay person bake a cake for an anti-gay cause. Well, the Supreme Court cited these three cases and say this is an impermissible bias. And the impermissible bias was evident also in testimony, I think. Well, the main decision here was handed down by Justice, was written by Justice Kennedy. And, I'll get to it here. It was good because, I mean, they brought up the Holocaust. They said, well, you know, This is the commissioner. This is the head guy for the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. He's basically saying things like, well, you can't just that religion, Christian religion has despicable pieces of rhetoric in it. And religion is used to justify discrimination and events like slavery and the Holocaust. These are actual things he said. And the other commissioners, dead silent, crickets, did not dispute it. And the court looked at that and basically said, look, there's an impermissible hostility toward religion. And you didn't well enough weigh or consider the baker's, the shop owner's sincerely held religious beliefs. The decision in the case came down to just a few lines. And it said, the commission's hostility was inconsistent with the First Amendment's guarantee that our laws be applied in a manner that is neutral toward religion. It goes on to explain what that is. So what it is, what this case, how this case was decided in the main opinion is that this is a free exercise case. The baker has a free exercise, has a right to freely exercise his religion. And in certain narrow cases, that trumps the public accommodation statutes, laws on our books that guarantee public access to businesses that are open to the public. Fair enough? Makes sense? I think this decision actually, that put that way, is wrong, or at least is only half true. Now, before you skewer me, let me explain. I agree with the outcome, but I think it was decided for wrong reasons. And there's one person in the Supreme Court that apparently agrees with me, and that is Justice Thomas. In a concurring opinion, he writes, while Phillips, and I quote, while Phillips rightly prevails on his free exercise claim, I, meaning Justice Thomas, write separately to address his free speech claim. Ha! That is exactly, my friends, what this case is about. And you will be, trust me, you will be the smart guy in the room if you know this. Because everybody is talking about this as religious liberties versus gay rights. Or more broadly, free exercise of religion versus civil rights. And incidentally, we agree on both those issues, generally speaking, right? We understand that there is a balance to be struck between the civil rights of one person and the rights of another. And society has to balance these. Well, this was the big concern with gay rights, the gay rights movement, as we moved into gay marriage. I remember this during the time Prop 8, and that was what a lot of the so-called demagoguery on the anti-gay marriage side, what it was being called out for, right? What they were saying is they were saying, look, if you allow gay marriage, it's Pandora's box, and all of a sudden they're going to be making, you know, Mormon bishops marry gays in the temple, and you're going to have Catholic priests forced to ordain, gay couples, and you're going to have, and it started listing, you're going to have problems with adoption, and some of it has come true, certainly. But a lot of it, I argued at the time, was overblown because I said, look, you're going to have a balance between the rights of a gay couple to marry, to be free from discrimination by the state, and you will, and the law also at the same time protects the rights of individuals who will have religious and expressive differences. Well, I feared for a time that with this case, I would be wrong. And the reason I think that free speech is the right analysis, as per Justice Thomas, is because this cake is an expression. You're asking a guy. So, by the way, Jack Phillips, the baker in Colorado, he is a kind of a Michelangelo type guy. He makes really phenomenal cakes. I don't know. Have you... any of you getting married or have been married, gotten married recently? I am so sorry. No. Marriage is a great thing. It's not that. I'm just saying the ceremony itself, especially if you're trying to do it on a budget like we were. Oh, my gosh. These things are expensive. And why are these cakes so expensive? Well, they're fancy. You've been to a wedding lately? Some of these cakes? They're fancy, they're artistic, they're designed. And these people that do them, by the way, a lot of them are really weird. It's like anybody who is a craftsman, I mean, craftsmen tend to be odd. And it's because great craftsmen really do put their expression, their life, their personality, their whole raison d'etre goes into this, you know, thing that they're doing. Now, I'm not a craftsman. I don't understand it necessarily, but I've talked to people that are, and I get it. And I get that in order to create your craft and to make something beautiful out of nothing, you got to pour your soul into it. And if your soul is 100% against something, I don't think the government should be forced to make you express yourself. Actually, that is exactly what the First Amendment is all about. And most people don't understand this. They think free speech is about speaking freely. Well, free speech is also, it also has a component of, there's a compulsion component, okay? In other words, you know, free speech, the First Amendment doesn't just limit the government's authority to limit your speech, to restrict your speech, but also to compel speech. So you can't pass a law, for example, that would, well, you can't pass a law saying, you know, you need to say the Pledge of Allegiance every day. Or you need to say the Pledge of Allegiance at least once a year. You can't be compelled by the government to say something. And here that is, in my opinion, and also I guess Justice Thomas agrees with me, that is exactly what happened here. The Civil Rights Commission and the higher court of appeals that it was taken up with, they both told this baker, you've got to create a custom cake. You've got to pour your expressive ability, your talents, your everything into a cake with a message that is contrary to your beliefs. Now, I absolutely know, I'm convinced as I looked at this record and I see the things that were said by the commission and the things that were written, there's an anti-Christian bias here. I am absolutely convinced that if this baker were Muslim and somebody came into their store and wanted to bake a cake for some, you know, for Geert Wilders to come over, a Geert Wilders party, and the guy goes, no way, I'm not baking for that Islamophobe. This commission here would never touch it. Oh, yeah, no, you can't do it, blah, 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 you know, free exercise clause, whatever. But there was a bias here. And, well, again, they got slapped down and overruled. But I think the real issue here is the freedom of speech case. And it's important. It ought to be really important to you. Because as we get more radical as a society, as we continue to slip away into all these crazy areas we always talk about it as political correctness. We talk about not being able to speak about certain issues in our society. For example, transgenderism. Can't talk about it, right? Because immediately if you express an opinion that is other than groupthink on the subject, what happens? Well, you're a bigot. You're a hater. You're this and that. But but that's just the media calling you a bigot. That's just, you know, maybe a radio station censoring me or whatnot. But here, this is a commission that is a governmental commission that is forcing somebody to say something or to do something. And that goes against, you know, that kind of goes against some of our fundamental traditional notions of what's fair and what's just. In the concurring opinion here that Justice Thomas wrote, this is exactly where he gets into it. He goes that this is the appeals court in Colorado that heard this case and decided against the baker. The court described his conduct, the baker's conduct, as a refusal to, quote, design and create a cake to celebrate same-sex weddings. The commission's order required Phillips to sell, quote, any product he would sell to heterosexual couples, including custom wedding cakes. Now, even after they described the conduct in that way, described as custom, as a design and create process, they decided that it was not expressive and was not protected speech. But this, in my opinion, goes against some very established law. There are cases out there that have absolutely said that speech is not just speaking. It's what's expressed. It's, words are not just speech. It's not just if you write something on the cake, you know, I love gays or whatever. That's not enough. That's not the only part of what's covered by the First Amendment. Expression. There's a case. There's a great case about a group in Massachusetts that it was a St. Patrick's Day group. So I don't know, the Irish Catholic group. They're holding a parade for St. Patty's Day. And the gay rights people, they say, we want to join the parade. And they said, no, we don't want a gay float in the parade. And they sued and they took it to the Massachusetts Commission. I said, oh, thou shalt have a gay float. And it goes up to the higher court. And the court finds, rightly so, that a parade and a float is an expression. Even if it's not your float, even if you're including a float of another group, it's forcing you to express something that you don't want. Think about it this way. What if Phillips, the baker here, was designing a cake that he just had on the shelf somewhere? It was already pre-made. And the court, and so what these guys would come in and say, hey, we want to buy that cake over there. It's pre-made. There's nothing about gay wedding or anything. And then they had another baker put something on top of it that made it a gay wedding cake. It's almost the same thing. As long as Phillips' name is attached to it, do you see how far you can stretch that decision? Phillips' name is attached to it. It still is an added endorsement of speech. You're compelling him to say something if you make him do that. Oh, it might be a little bit of a stretch. But at any rate, this case was always about speech. Well, I don't. Oh, I'll tell you when we come back. I'll tell you if this what I mean by this ruling perhaps being quite narrow. And it is. I'll actually show you exactly the part of the ruling that's narrow. I also have a soundbite here of people that are, I think, getting this quite wrong because of the way that this case is framed. At any rate, don't go anywhere. Just a couple more items about this that are very important. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network, in the bunker deep behind the orange curtain. Fear not. It is I, deciphering the crap that is flowing out there and making sense of it for you, so you can go forward this next week and be the smartest person at the lunch table. Now, here is the actual ruling, the holding at the end of the case in the Masterpiece Cake Shop versus Colorado Civil Rights Commission. Opinion of the court. This is written by Justice Kennedy. The commission's hostility, he writes, was inconsistent with the First Amendment's guarantee that our laws be applied in a manner that is neutral toward religion. Okay? In this case, the adjudication concerned a context that may well be going different going forward in the respects noted above. However, later cases raising these or similar concerns are resolved in the future. For these reasons, the rulings of the commission and the state court are overturned. Now, it's the next part that's very interesting. The outcome of cases like this, so other people that might be in the same predicament as this baker, must await further elaboration in the courts. And in that sense, this is really just a decision for this baker. And it's really not intended to be a broad ruling that is used in other cases. Now, the left is crowing about this. It's very narrow. See, it's so narrow. It can't be used anywhere else. And it's just a whatever. You know, it's a blip. Don't even look at this. But I have an important observation about this to make. You know, the Supreme Court gets hundreds, if not thousands, of cases that it cannot hear in a given year. And they grant cert or certiorari on cases only that they find to be important. And it's the majority of justices. They have to vote. And many times, worthy cases, in my opinion, don't get heard by the court. The court doesn't hear them. And they don't hear them because they don't think it's important. What this tells me is the court found that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission was so egregious in its abuse of the rights of this baker that they literally plucked this case out just and made a decision on it and spent time on it and wrote all these pages just to rebuke them. The left, again, is getting this so wrong. They think they got off the hook and they don't realize that this kook panel of theirs that they have, by the way, replicated all across the country, goes around abusing anybody on the right and is Christian and who, you know, is culturally conservative, that these kangaroo courts, the Supreme Court says, enough. No, we will, even if it's egregious, we will take one, we will examine one case at a time and look at it. This is not typical because, mind you, if the court has limited, it goes to fall, and by the way, this is true, but I'm just making sure you understand it. If court has limited time, limited resources, only so many cases it can hear, the types of cases that it picks out are ones that affect broad number of people, right? These are, they pick cases out that become instructional, that become canon, you know, canon of law, join the canon of law to cover, you know, broad scenarios. Or specific scenarios, but broad number of people. So that, I think, is something very important. Now, I heard this clip, Judge Andrew Napolitano speaking on Fox News. He's the legal analyst and talking about this case. This is what he had to say.
With respect to this case and this case only, the baker prevails because the baker's decision not to bake the cake is rooted in his religious beliefs. I think this is a dangerous opinion because it will allow others to say, my religious beliefs prohibit me from dealing with women or Italians or African Americans, and they will base it on the logic in this case.
It's so interesting. I totally disagree with him. In fact, the very last sentence of this case sums it up perfectly. Any further decisions by other courts, right? They're talking about all these other circumstances that may come in the future. All must be recognized or weighed in the context of recognizing that these disputes must be resolved with tolerance, with undue disrespect to sincere religious beliefs, and without subjecting gay persons to indignities when they seek goods and services in an open market. So if there is really a true holding in this case that is applicable to other cases, it's you've got to balance the equities. You have to balance the right of one person versus the rights of another. And what you don't get to do, by the way, if you're a left-wing nut, you don't get to terrorize the world with your beliefs no more than the other side is. And that's the word. All right, funny segment up next. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Rogowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, our funny segment, Friday Funny, here we go. In Brisbane, Australia, they have caught a culprit. A bit of amateur sleuthing finally apprehended a neighborhood man who was pooping on people's doorsteps. They actually have, I'm looking at a picture of this guy. I don't know, it doesn't say how old he is. He looks to be about maybe mid-60s. Old enough to have good judgment. He's got his pants dropped, and he seems to be going to the bathroom. And I guess he was caught on camera. people were finding human poo all over their neighborhood and decided to set out and find this guy. He's a corporate guy. He's a big-time corporate guy. He ends up getting fired from his job when his identity is revealed. Let me ask you this. Do you run? Can I give you my update? Well, Sherry's training for a half marathon. And somehow I got roped into training with her. I'm not doing the half marathon. There's no way. Because speaking of poo, this marathon is in San Francisco, and I'm not running it. I'm not running 12 miles. Oh, no, 13 miles with the risk of stepping in, on a hypodermic needle or into some, homeless poo. So I'm not doing that. But sticking to the same subject, if you will, permit me. I have found that there is a big problem when it comes to running. It's a big problem. No, it's not just running. Actually, that's the hard part. That's number one. But we'll call it the number two problem. Yeah, you guessed it. No, I get it. Look, the longest I've run so far in this training, 7 miles. I've done 7 miles. And, 6 miles in, suddenly if it's in the morning, nature calls. And if you're running like me, you're running early in the morning because I got work to do. So I'm running, 6 a.m. in the morning. And I'm, and then I have to go to the bathroom. It's tough. But what I don't get. Oh, I can explain it, though. OK, assuming this guy doesn't assuming this mad pooper doesn't have some perverse, excitable thing that he does with this, whatever. You know what I mean? Provided it's not that. People are so dedicated to running that what would you do if you had to go to the bathroom somewhere? Would you go in the bushes or you'd go out of your way somewhere? You'd stop, But these people are so dedicated to running, these crazy running people, that they don't want to stop. They want to keep with their routine, right? They're fanatics. So that's my interpretation of what's going on here. This guy's a running fanatic. There's a woman like this in the States, too, who did this. I think Florida, right? Because all crazy news. But of course, it has to be Florida. Every bit of crazy news. But every time this guy is pooping, I think in the same spot, right? Roughly on right in front. But that's the amateur hour. If you're gonna leave your little nuggets around town, you got to spread them out. Anyway, they ID'd him, they've apprehended him, and found out that the guy lives only like a couple miles away from the scene. So that's he's close to home, right? Because that's part of his routine. All right, there it is. Yeah, I'll report back on this marathon or this half marathon, excuse me, how it keeps going. I think my limit is going to be 8 miles. I'm telling you right now. I don't think I want to run any more than that. And I definitely will not be going to the bathroom on people's doorsteps. That much I promise you. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Rogowski, Sam Nation, all right, somebody in the studio has just reminded me. The word I was searching for last segment was fecal-philiac. I don't want to tip you off who knew that word. It was not Dr. Audio. So who does that leave? No, there's no entourage here. It's, just the three of us. I'll let you work out the process of elimination on that. Remember when I told you I went on that? Yes, pun unintended, process of elimination. Okay. Remember. You guys, it's Friday. We got to let loose a little. Anyway. I love these guys. I have to, just a brief aside, we were in the thick of it when we were nightly 2 hours on the radio. These guys and I, we spent a lot of time together, and doing the show now once a week is different. But I'm still glad I get to spend time with Bill and Robbie. These guys, the show would not be what it is without them. And don't think it's not behind the scenes stuff. We go over these topics, we talk about things, and many of the things that are discussed on air are a result of their bright minds working, such as the fecal-philiac comment just now. All right, I got some letters in the mail. This is I had to share this. So cute. My son's classmates, who I chaperoned on that field trip back in May. I told you about that, didn't I? Took the kids up to Alvera Street. We took the train. It was me, my fourth grade teacher, who's now Daniel's fourth grade teacher, and we. And about 70 fourth graders, right? 70 kids on the train, walking around Olivera Street. It was great. They all, it's funny what the kids remember from the trip. Like, so they're writing me thank you letters. All three of them had something to say about the dead cockroaches that we found. For example, the dead cockroaches were really funny! Exclamation point. The other guy wrote something about cockroaches. There's something here, too. Well, I didn't want to highlight these. They're just so cute, and they're written in cursive. They were excited about the churros, about the food, and this was great. I like the deal that you made. The one that we gave you $5 and then you paid for the rest. John, you're going to be an entrepreneur. You're already seeing the value of money. Yeah, that's the deal I made them. Everybody was worried about, about not having enough money for lunch. And I said, look, you guys all pay me $5 and we're going to order and we're going to have a good lunch. So naturally, my group was the cool group. But they were all fascinated. I'm telling you, here we were supposedly having to learn about California history. And we found three dead cockroaches, which is not an uncommon sight in downtown L.A., and these, you would have thought, Irvine kids, what can I tell you? Three dead cockroaches, that is a fascinating deal. So anyway, John, Daniel, Nico, and Owen, that's right, Owen. You guys were great and loved doing that. Okie dokie. The election did not turn out as the Democrats were hoping, did it? Sad faces on MSNBC on election night. Here is Maria Teresa Kumar talking to John Podoretz on MSNBC. It's Tuesday night when the returns began coming in. Go ahead, Robbie, play that.
It's not as much of a wave as we had seen in Virginia, as we'd seen in Georgia and Alabama. So I think that really a lot of the stuff that is coming in from the base, from the Republican Party, they're just as energized as we had seen as previously within the Democratic Party.
That is,
and I think that's very true with what we're seeing right now with the results in California. You should be expecting a much bigger wave in some of these really close congressional districts that are held by Republicans, and you're just not seeing that.
I think everybody sort of assumed that the level of Democratic enthusiasm, wild over enthusiasm compared to Republicans in 2017 was going to carry through to 2018, and so far we don't see that much evidence of that.
Yeah, this is where you get it all wrong. See, and John Podoretz, conservative commentator, can't be right all the time. That's why you listen to Sam Nation. Let me tell you, there's a critical difference here between the so-called energy on the Democratic side versus the so-called energy on the Republican side. See, the Republicans don't have energy. They're just quietly pissed off at home. They were pissed off for 8 years during Obama, watching their country deteriorate, watching the world laugh at us, watching the media tell us what we should be all in for, watching Obama give away the store to every crackpot dictator out there, nationalize our health care, raise our taxes, et cetera, et cetera. And all those people, they weren't protesting out in the street. Even the Tea Party by Antifa standards. I mean, who was the Tea Party? I mean, just a few guys out there waving some flags. Tea Party cleaned up its trash, at least, at the end of a rally. So the Republicans, they're the ones busy working. They're going to their jobs. They're going to their businesses. They're going about their lives, and they're quiet. You're not hearing from them. Who you're hearing from are the Democratic agitators, paid for in large part by George Soros and so forth. But those people don't translate into votes, at least not proportionally into votes. That's the so-called energy doesn't. So what happened in California? I mean, they expected, I think, frankly, the left expected that in all these open primaries in California, we would end up with two Democrats on the ticket on all these congressional races. And the Republicans would be completely sidelined. It didn't happen. Republicans came out to vote. So is it a sign of things to come? Sure. Talk a little bit more about that when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
My iPhone just froze. This is how I'm going to be as a senior. I just know it. It's going to be like the OS system on my phone. I'm touching the screen. Nothing's happening. You know, I just ran the latest update, so don't get on me, Robbie. I ran the latest up. There we go. Okay, now I don't even know what. Anyway, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation here, back on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Ba-ba-da-ba-da. Look, I love this little snippet from Chris Matthews. Remember Chris Tingles Matthews, the great paramour of one Barack Obama. Paramour, and spoken more in metaphorical terms, of course, although God only knows. He is talking on MSNBC with Morning Joe. This is Joe Scarborough and his lovely love, Mika Brzezinski. Matthews says this about the Democratic Party and their prospects in November. Listen closely.
There's so much elitism in the Democratic Party. It's so outrageous, and it's self-saluting. And I'm telling you, the people feel it. There's a party going on, and they ain't invited to it. And that's a big part of this. It's not just economics. I don't buy the whole Marxist argument. It's all about economics. It's not all about economics. It's about sensing that your leaders give a damn about you personally. There's too much self-saluting, too many events that seem to be about saluting them, too many galas. People are tired of it. I'm sick of them. And by the way, I'm rooting against them. Even though I may agree with their policies, I think there's a party attitude of elitism, and I think they got to get over it. And it's too much talking to fundraisers, because the people they talk to on these kind of shows are really the people they want their money from, and they're the elite.
Mika Brzezinski is looking at Chris Matthews the way Hillary Clinton would look at Jennifer Flowers. I mean, you know that whole expression, if looks could kill. I thought at any point in time, red lasers would shoot out of her pupils and begin searing Chris Matthews' eyebrows off. Folks, I'm not exaggerating. But the thing is Matthews is right. There is this absolutely pompous echo chamber within the left and especially within the Democratic Party. Tone deaf. And these people selected, not elected, selected Hillary Clinton to be their candidate, lost the election. And then absolutely, from that point forward, have refused to come to terms with the loss and have been lying to themselves that it's because of Russians, foreign agents, sneaky subversive people in the Maldives. Right? It's there every possible conspiracy theory why Trump got elected, except for the fundamental truth that the candidate that they thought was the best candidate wasn't. She sucked. And their delusions are continuing so much so that now you've got Chris Matthews wandering off the plantation. You understand how huge this is? This isn't just some commentator. This is Chris Matthews, whose leg tingled so badly he had to tell all of America about it when he first listened to the powerful orator Barack Obama back in 2008. This is epic stuff, and we will follow it closely. But if you're listening to the media and you've been watching CNN and they've been telling you about the blue wave that's coming in November and the sweeping, Democrats might actually lose just a few seats in the House and actually gain seats in the Senate, which in the long run would be better. Overall, because it's in the Senate where the votes were needed, for example, with Obamacare. So, yeah, I wouldn't read about this. And Mitt Romney, you heard what Mitt Romney said last 10 seconds of the show. Mitt Romney said that Trump's chances in 2020 are solid. He's got a lock on the race. Well, yeah, I could have told you that, too. I do all the time. Have a wonderful weekend. Tell a friend about the show. You know, this is, you need to tell your friends, because you don't want to, you want to spread the wealth, okay? Don't hold back. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, on the Sam Nation Radio Network.